Register Radio is sponsored by Ignatius Press, the premier publisher of outstanding Catholic books, magazines, videos, and music, faithful to the magisterium of the Church. On the web at ignatius.com.
From the National Catholic Register, this is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
This is National Catholic Schools Week, and today on Register Radio, Dan Burke talks with Nashville Dominican Sister John Mary Fleming, who now leads the Secretariat of Catholic Education at the U.S. Bishops' Conference. They're going to be talking about the strengths and challenges of Catholic schools in 2013. In our second half, Jeanette DeMello talks with church historian and Opus Dei priest Father C. John McCloskey about the need to remain constantly hopeful for conversion. They're going to be talking about the story and witness of Dr. Bernard Nathanson, who went from abortionist to Catholic pro-life advocate. That is quite a journey. We'll be talking about ways that each of us can become instruments of conversion. Welcome again to Register Radio. It's a co-production of EWTN and the National Catholic Register. I'm Tom Price, along with Dan Burke, Executive Director of the Register.
Great to be with you, Tom.
And we also welcome Jeanette DeMello. She is Editor-in-Chief of the Register.
Hello, Tom.
Glad to have you along the show today. First up is Dominican Sister John Mary Fleming. She is a member of St. Cecilia's Congregation in Nashville, Tennessee. Sister holds a licentiate in canon law from the Catholic University of America, also a master's in theology from Franciscan University of Steubenville, and a master of education from the University of Southern Mississippi. In May of 2012, Sister was appointed the executive director of the Secretariat of Catholic Education for the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops. The Nashville Dominicans are, of course, renowned for their excellence in education, and we were delighted to learn of her appointment with the USCCB. Sister John Mary, welcome to Register Radio.
Thank you so much for having me this morning. I'm very grateful to be here.
It's great to have you, Sister. There are more than 6,800 schools across the U.S. You have a big job. How does your role and function help Catholic education in the U.S.?
My role really is primarily to the bishops themselves here at the USCCB. It's been a wonderful experience to step in and see their dedication to Catholic education. And one of our tasks, one of our goals, is to bring the national conversation back up again and place it before everybody's eyes. Our Catholic schools are a marvelous part of our Catholic history here in the United States, and really is a wonderful story to tell. So we're looking backwards and forwards simultaneously. I'm working with the bishops and trying to create an opportunity in the near future for kind of a national conversation about our schools again.
So tell us a little bit about what is the emphasis and purpose of this week that we promote every year.
Catholic Schools Week is a wonderful time to bring to the Catholic community, our parish community, our national community, our diocesan community, the importance of the schools in our local area. It's also a national conversation in which people are able to see the beauty and the importance of education overall within a faith environment. So in many of the schools across the country, they've been involved in masses and special days for teachers and students, special days that include faith rallies, reconciliation, focus on the sacraments. So it's a great time to highlight what is a Catholic school, what's its importance, and to really refocus on the mission of Catholic education, which is preaching the gospel. And I think it does a wonderful job in helping the schools remember that they're part of a larger piece, they're part of a larger church, a larger reality. The word Catholic is a universal reality, and they have a rich heritage. And so it's a great time, a very purposeful time, in which to focus in on all of that and to kind of make sure that we reach out to our parishes, we reach out to our families, we're reaching out past ourselves, so that we can highlight the importance of what's going on inside the school itself.
This is Dan Burke with Register Radio. We're here with Sister John Mary Fleming, the Director of the Secretariat of Catholic Education for the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops. Sister, you've had some time now to settle into your new role, and I suspect you've gained some important perspective on the state of Catholic education in the new United States, and particularly we can focus now on the parochial level. What would you say are the top three challenges we're facing in Catholic education today?
The top challenge is our Catholic identity.
Okay.
the term Catholic identity has probably been battered around quite a bit. Lately, though, what's wonderful about it is it's almost like being in a pond in which Catholic identity is the water and the area in which we get our air from. In the past, Catholic identity was like a piece to four other pieces, and we would look at it in relationship to academics and governance and things like that. Now I think the focus is that Catholic identity is the focus of a school. It's helping us to place our minds back on the nature and the purpose of the school. It's mission-driven. And in our environment right now, that's really very important. Catholic schools, over a long history, kind of took its eye off the ball, and we started becoming like the public school or the other school around us. What Catholic identity is doing now is helping us to refocus on that very unique, wonderful mission of preaching the gospel and focusing on the dignity of the human person. For Catholic Schools Week and the Catholic identity issue, that is really central and key. Obviously, accessibility. We have concerns related to people not being able to access Catholic education because of its cost. Also, because we've been closing schools in the last 15 to 20 years, the access to a school in the local neighborhood may not be as direct as it used to be. So we have a lot of challenges in the area of how can we think creatively, think out of the box, in relationship to helping our schools be much more accessible. And accessibility also deals with diverse populations. We need to learn to respond to the Latino community that's growing in our country. Also, there's a numerous ethnic communities up and down different parts and different regions in the country. And I think we as a Catholic community, in mirroring what's happening in our country, also need to recognize that access for those individuals is important in our schools. And then in addition to that, the last area would be governance. In the past, again, the parish model was the model for most Catholic schools. And now I think we're moving into a period of time in which the governance of our schools may not necessarily just be a single parish school, and that our pastors might be working together to allow for Catholic education in their area, but it might be a regional school, it might be a private school, it might take on a different complexion in a governance model than it used to be in the past. And there's a great deal of enthusiasm going on at the local level with Catholic education right now.
This is Dan Burke with Register Radio. We're talking with Sister John Mary Fleming, the Executive Director of the Secretariat for Catholic Education for the USCCB. And Sister just shared with us the top three areas of focus or concern, which are Catholic identity, accessibility, and governance. Accessibility seems to me to be a big issue these days with the cost of education and the economic challenges we face. Sister, what are models out there that are working in the church that can make Catholic education easier to access for families who understand the value of it?
We've always leaned on the issue of subsidy at our parish level, so that's still very prominent. Another initiative that's gone on is that dioceses have moved to a position where all the churches in the diocese are supporting Catholic education rather than just the local parish church. That's been very helpful in many regards. But what we're really recognizing is that at the local level, leadership and excellent stewardship of resources allows our Catholic schools to flourish and to have a strong vitality. So strong school boards, strong principal presence, and a really active marketing and enrollment plan really reach out to people who, in many regards, don't even really know our schools are there.
Right.
The regional model has also become very important. One school, which is fed by three or four parishes, also has a strong presence governance-wise.
Have you seen any particular diocese around the U.S. that really is doing this well and can serve as a model for other dioceses around the U.S.?
The Archdiocese of Washington has moved to the model where all parishes are supporting the Catholic school, and that's a strong model that can be used.
Kansas City, Kansas is doing that as well,
aren't you? Kansas is doing it, and then they're also taking it one step further in which they're offering tuition-free schools where the stewardship, and they use that term very specifically, of the entire Catholic community allows them to offer Catholic education in a beautifully stewardship-oriented way, and that's been a great model that's been working out there as well.
So in Kansas City, Kansas, in Washington, you indicate that there are strong models. Mm-hmm. Are at the USCCB, when you look at these areas that are going to be that are successful and that are growing, I know Kansas City is growing like crazy. How is it that you bring the best that you see out there to other dioceses who may be struggling or dealing with school closures and that sort of thing?
We've begun to have meetings with the bishops at this point hosted here at the USCCB, in which we are literally sharing ideas, the models, the success stories. We can all point to what's not working. What's really important right now is to point to what is working. And so that's what the role of our secretariat is doing, is to bring the bishops together, to reinvigorate the conversation among them, and to show them best practices that are going on in our country. In the past, our forebears were able to build an enormously successful Catholic school environment in this country with little or no resources. So it's very hard to think that we can't do the same thing now. And so what's important is to really bring all that together to the bishops and enliven them in the conversation of seeing our schools really as centers of the new evangelization, communities of the new evangelization. Although we can focus in on the financial question, this is really not a finance conversation. It's a conversation of seeing the Catholic school again as a large part of preaching the gospel.
Amen. I think that there's no better place, both from the standpoint of teaching those in the pews who may or may not have had good catechesis, the parents of the children that go to these schools, and really trying to set a new standard mm-hmm. in the way that we educate children, and then also reaching out to those who are not Catholic at all, but see Catholic schools as a haven of safety and love, really, of their children beyond that they can find in the public systems.
We're looking around, and our world is becoming increasingly very secular. Mm-hmm. And being able to have the schools as a support to parents, because as we know, the church's tradition, the parent is the primary educator for their child. And so I believe our schools are more important now than they ever were in the past. As centers of the new evangelization, we can actually reach out not only to the children in a very specific way to really give the message of the gospel and the teachings of our church, but also reach out secondarily to our parent community. Many of our parents, and in our world right now, people are moving around quite a bit, and seeing the school as a family center is becoming more and more important.
That's a powerful model, and I think I've seen that a bit at Overbrook in Nashville recently. I've had some experience down there. It was a great, fantastic work that you're doing. We appreciate all your work with the USCCB, and we're grateful that you've spent some time with us sharing the vision and the challenges that we face, Sister.
Well, thank you so much for having me this morning.
Yes, my thanks as well, Sister John Mary. Clearly, I think the U.S. bishops have exactly the right person in this very, very important position.
Well, keep us all in your prayers, and we will do the same for you. And many thanks for all you're doing for our church.
Thank you so much. When we return, we're going to talk about an incredible conversion. This is Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Stay with us.
Hello, I'm Michael Warsaw, Chief Executive of EWTN and publisher of the National Catholic Register. We're in a time in history like no other, and our fight for religious freedom and the need for the new evangelization, it's essential to stay connected via the faithful Catholic content delivered by the Register. We've finally been able to help realize Mother Angelica's dream. She always wanted a newspaper as part of EWTN's media apostolate. Why? Because there's an important catechetical opportunity at the intersection of faith and culture. Since the 1920s, the Register has been advancing the truth of the Magisterium. This valuable resource will help you to better understand the faith and deepen your relationship with our Lord. Join the growing ranks of Register subscribers today and access the one source of leading voices and opinions concerning the issues that matter most to you.
To start your subscription to the National Catholic Register today, go to EWTN.com and click on the banner for the Register or call 800-854-6316. That's EWTN.com and click on the Register subscription banner or call 800-854-6316.
let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
And welcome back. Along with Dan Burke and Jeanette DeMello, I'm Tom Price. Father C. John McCloskey, a priest of the Prelature of Opus Dei, is with us today. He lives in the Chicago area, but he serves as a research fellow for the Faith and Reason Institute based in Washington, D.C. For many years, Father was the director of the Catholic Information Center for the Archdiocese of Washington. He became known for walking with a number of high-profile folks in their conversion to Catholicism. People including Senator Sam Brownback, Robert Novak, Judge Robert Bork, and Dr. Bernard Nathanson. Father is the co-author of the book Good News, Bad News, Evangelization, Conversion, and the Crisis of Faith. Today, Father McCloskey will talk with us about the conversion of Dr. Bernard Nathanson, an abortionist and an atheist who became Catholic. That is quite a journey. In Father McCloskey's words, he was a prophet. Father, welcome to Register Radio.
Well, it's a delight to be with you and with your listeners.
On January 25th, the Feast of the Conversion of St. Paul, I'd hope to talk to you about conversions, especially the conversion of Dr. Nathanson, the abortionist who turned Catholic pro-life advocate. Yet there was another big event going on that day, on January 25th. It was the March for Life in Washington, D.C. Let's talk for a moment about that big event. It was 40 years of abortion, 40 years of protesting it. What impact has the march made over the last 40 years?
Perhaps the most important is to show the solidarity of a cause which is the most important cause in our country, which is to save our unborn children, and has ramifications for many other things having to do with the culture of life that we're all trying to live. The very fact of gathering together, which is obviously very encouraging to see how many people, and generally I think you can say that the march has grown and grown over time. And this is also, as we well know, in the face of oftentimes of very difficult conditions of weather. You know, for the older people, it's wonderful to see the tens of thousands or more than that of young people from all over the country who make this march. And, of course, they are the future. At the same time, it's good for the younger people to see older people making sacrifice to be there.
Yeah, you said once that it was an uphill battle, though, the March for Life, this attempt to protest abortion. We don't see much change in the culture around us.
You know, the most important thing is for us is to create our own culture. And, of course, as you know, and that you know, serious Christians and Catholics tend to have more children than anyone else. And also the great and important work of thinking not of all those babies who are aborted, which is so painful to think about, but to think of how many babies have been saved over the course of these last years as a result of pregnancy centers and picketing outside of abortionists and things of that sort. But we have to be realists. I mean, we're always hopeful because we're Catholic, we're Christian. Probably what we're going to be doing for at least some time is doing everything possible to lessen the numbers of abortions. And I'd be quite honest, I think that's going to take much more state by state and city by city than it is by affecting the federal government.
This is Jeanette DeMello on Register Radio. I'm here with Father C. John McCloskey, and we're talking about the pro-life movement and conversions. Father, there are a few examples of pro-choice people who have experienced conversions over the years. These pro-choice people, you know, when they become pro-life, really become strong advocates. One example is Dr. Bernard Nathanson. He's a key example.
Dr. Nathanson was a man who died, I guess, a year and a half ago.
2011, yeah.
Yes, and he's a man who was from Canada, a Jewish tradition. Probably his grandfather was a rabbi. His father also was a doctor and also performed abortions. So he grew up in Canada, and then he moved down to New York at a certain point and began to practice his practice, which was not simply abortions, obviously. It was OB-GYN, as we would call it, you know, dealing with women issues and delivering babies also, which he did a lot of. But at a certain point along the way, he was certainly, all during this time, an atheist, came from a very difficult family background, as he talks about in his book that will be reissued this month or next month at the latest. At a certain point, he knew that he could not really say, given his knowledge as a doctor and also looking at these kind of the ways of looking into the womb, that he was not killing babies. Before he kidded himself, this was something that was inchoate or was on its way to becoming human. At that point, he had an enormous crisis because he had been the advocate and probably more responsible than almost any man for the legalization of abortion in New York, which then spread throughout the country. In this sense, he at least was a man who had a sense of duty And so as a result, he came out and said, I'm against abortion, which caused enormous news in the world. You know, I don't know if this cartoon is still around, Doonesbury, I think it's called.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, well, he was a major figure in there. They made fun of him for a couple of years at least, characters and so on.
So he faced persecution for his conversion.
Yes, for his conversion to life. The conversion to life led him to the conversion to the faith.
Yes, tell me about that, and how do you know him? Is that where your relationship with him began?
Well, I was just back, I'd say, a year. I came back from Europe after being ordained and finishing a doctorate in just 1982, and I was in New York City for 8 years. And, of course, I'm from a big Catholic family, and how could I not be pro-life? Mm-hmm. And at a certain point, I met him at a pro-life meeting. I can't remember which one. He was giving a talk, and we started what simply a friendship, and which I was somewhat amazed at, given that he was considerably older than I was and much more important in every way as a figure. And so over the course of, I guess it was 7 or 8 years, I would meet with him at his house in on the west side of New York, in his library, and I've never seen a bigger personal library in my life than he had. And we would talk, and I would basically feed him books, which is one of the ways I work in dealing with converts. It's not simply answering questions. Oftentimes it's simply, what would you like to know? And this is a book, you know, or a pamphlet for that matter, or a little article, which I know you're aware of, some of my little articles.
Sure.
And, you know, and that's oftentimes the easiest way. And over time, I would see no more than twice a year, I'd say, or maybe socially some other time. And at a certain point, he got to the point where he realized this is what I want. And I think most people, not all, but most people that I've dealt with who become Catholics, a lot of them, they really, besides wanting to belong to the true church, they want to be forgiven their sins. And of course, I can't speak in terms of sins as such, but certainly Dr. Nathanson had a very heavy load of literally tens of thousands that he had been personally responsible for, and also, unfortunately, millions others up to that point. And so he got to that moment when he said, "I want to be baptized."
Yeah, what a beautiful experience to accompany him in that. I think it's a huge witness to have someone like that come to faith, come to reconciliation, and then to speak powerfully about it.
Yes, and it took place in St. Patrick's Cathedral, and it was on the Feast of the Immaculate Conception, which was even more poignant. And present at that particular baptism was Joan Andrews, who's now Joan Bell, who was kind of a pro-life heroine, and she was the godmother,
sure.
And a man by the name of Chris Slattery, who runs 7 or 8 pro-life
sure.
clinics in the New York area.
Sure.
Then Father Marks of Human Life International, who's now deceased. Father Richard Newhouse was there, who's also deceased. Monsignor William Smith was probably the best moral.
Many other advocates, other advocates for life.
Yes,
sure.
and then there was me.
Yeah.
But the only thing, of course, now I still feel very young, but I'm the only one who's left of that group.
Oh wow! So you have a story to tell.
I'm the one who was there who remembers it. And it was also a nice thing. Also present was Chuck Colson, who just
sure.
died a few months ago, who was not a Catholic, but he came up from D.C. in order
sure.
to be present, and it was an amazing thing. And as Chuck Colson put it very well, he said it was like being at the site of the catacombs, because it was into the crypt, and, you know, on the Immaculate Conception, to see this Jewish man mm-hmm. having with the waters of baptism laid on him. It was really something I'll never forget.
A real witness to new life. Now, Father McCloskey, I have one more question for you. How can we become instruments of conversion, as you have been with Father, with Dr. Bernard Nathanson?
Well, we should be exemplary as much as we can be, giving our thoughts and our practice of the faith. We should ask for the grace of the Holy Spirit for Him to set us on fire. And then it's a question of realizing that all around us There are people, and everyone who's around us is either in a state of sin, a state of mortal sin, or is in a state of grace. And that we are here not simply to save our souls. That's pretty easy, actually. Thanks be to God and our parents and many other factors. But that one of the main things we are here for is in order to spread our faith, to give our joy, to be an instrument of God. The way I like to put it is to bring people to either reconciliation with the church, because they've been away from the church, of which we have an enormous number, or to bring people to the faith itself through the sacraments. And that starts off, as I said a moment ago, with friendship. But that friendship has to be in words. That is, we have to, when the time is right, to be right can be almost any time, is to be salesman for the Lord, for the church, to say, have you ever considered becoming a Catholic? Or, I am a Catholic. What's your religion? Would you like to know more about Catholicism?
Sure.
So we don't have to knock on doors, although you can do that if you'd like. I mean, but it's just we're surrounded at work and school and social activities and Super Bowl parties. There's always an opportunity there. And we have to get used to hearing no, which is nothing wrong with that either. We get great graces when we approach a person, talk to them about the faith, and say, I'm not interested, or I hate the Catholic Church.
Sure.
We're not all called to be martyrs. We're all called to be confessors of the faith. And that's how early Christianity in the Roman Empire grew, was precisely the way I'm talking about it now.
Sure.
They didn't have the EWTN in those days, or National Catholic Register. It was person to person, family to family.
Well, Father McCloskey, thank you very much for your personal witness and for sharing ways that we can witness. Thank you for being with us today.
Oh, it was my delight.
My thanks as well, Father. And thank you for joining us this time on Register Radio. For all of us at the Register and here at EWTN, I'm Tom Price. See you next week.
For more information about the National Catholic Register and about Register Radio, go to ncregister.com. Podcasts of Register Radio are posted on ncregister.com and on ewtn.com. Join us next week at this time for Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Register Radio is sponsored by Ignatius Press, the premier publisher of outstanding Catholic books, magazines, videos, and music, faithful to the magisterium of the Church. On the web at ignatius.com.